Do you know what time it is?
It's about 12.
It's just after I see a movie, I like to go get a piece of pie and talk about it. It's sort of a little tradition I have. Do you like to get pie after you see a good movie?
Hello and welcome to another movie podcast. Mm-hmm. It's bonus time, Roth. Are you excited for today's bonus episode?
Yes,
or,
I am.
Or I should say this month. Are you yawning?
I totally am.
I'm yawning.
Yeah, this is the bonus episode for March 2017, coming out probably 5 months later.
I think
as you're listening.
You're totally excited. Way more excited than I am, though.
As you're listening to this. We'll hash it out, Ralph, because...
Yeah, that's what we're doing, yeah.
Because I do think often that you're wrong, so it's going to be fun.
Okay.
So today's bonus episode will be T2 Trainspotting. It was going to be Life... That weird sci-fi movie that I heard terrible things about, so good thing we did not review that.
I mean, I wouldn't mind bashing a movie, to be honest.
Right, that's also fun to do.
Sure.
So T2 Trainspotting, that's our review. Feedback can always be sent to podmoviecast@gmail.com, and podmoviecast is also our Twitter handle. You can send us stuff there, or when I eventually do tweet from there, because I'm really forgetful about that shit.
Ditto.
And you can follow us... Nah, we'll do that at the end this time.
Sure.
Yeah, I think I fucked that up last month. last month. Anyway, so T2 Trainspotting is all we're going to do today. And this is really for the people who thank you for donating for our show, which I think was nobody. who got that episode in March. But you, like I said, most likely you're listening to this 5 months later. Anyway, all that stuff aside, Roth... Are you excited? Are you ready for T2?
I'm ready.
All right, let's talk about Trainspotting T2. T2 Train. That's a terrible name.
Oh, thank the fuck God.
Oh, my God. Okay.
Because I completely agree. It's the worst name. I could have came up with anything else.
Right. I just like.
I couldn't find this to find showtimes.
H2O is better because that's Halloween 20 years later. This is
no,
T20.
That's really bad.
T20 is better. T2O would have been better.
That's still bad.
I'm saying H2O
I would type in Trainspotting under my app and it would not find it. But I would type in T2, bam, and it pops up.
Right.
And I'm like, this is stupid.
Right. Let's start reviewing the movie. Clip time.
Hello, Mark.
Simon.
So what you been up to for 20 years?
I've been in Amsterdam.
Nice.
All right.
What else? Married? Nice.
Dutch woman.
Kids?
Two.
Boys or girls?
One of each.
Me, Mark, eh? That is a chip off the old block.
James, actually. And Laura. How about you?
I have a son. He's in London with his poor mother.
See him?
Pretty regular. Currently once every... 10 years?
Great clip.
Great clip. I think it was pretty good.
It was okay.
Let me read the review, or the synopsis, of this movie. First, there was an opportunity, then there was a betrayal. Mark Renton returns after 20 years to the friends he stole from. Sorrow, joy, loss, vengeance, hatred, friendship, love, longing, fear, regret, mortal danger, and self-destruction awaits everyone. That's I kind of took that from the IMDb review.
Sure.
I just like how they added all those words in there at the end. It feels very Trainspotty, if anything. And this is, like I said, directed by Danny Boyle, the guy who made his bones from the original Trainspotting 20 years ago. And, I mean, he's an English-ish director, but he did film that in Edinburgh, right? I believe. And this film is written by John Hodge. And is, I don't know how loosely, but it is based on a book or a series of books, possibly. I have not read them at all, so I know very little about the source material. And it stars Ewan McGregor, Ewan Bremmer, Johnny Lee Miller, and Robert Carlyle. And what's the name of that girl in the movie? Nope, it's not Shirley. What's the name of that? I'm trying to find her name here. The girl, Veronica, is played by Angela Nedyakova. I hope I didn't fuck that up. But those are the main actors. And I put her definitely fifth place, but she is in the movie quite a lot. So Veronica is a character, definitely. So, wow, this is a complicated movie. this movie is not like a movie that everyone's been expecting. It doesn't end like the first Matrix where you're like, what's next? You know, it ends and it has...
closure.
It does have... It feels like a one-off for sure is my point. No one expected or requested a sequel. But neither did people from the before series either. But we kept getting those in every 10 years and it was amazing for us anyway.
Yeah.
And for a lot of people. So, and like, yes, now we want them every time, right? So... before we get into T2 here, what did you think of the first Trainspotting? Did you, I know you've seen it before. I don't have to tell you that. I'm sure I've showed it to you way back when. Did you find it culturally relevant? Did you find it impactful as many people did when it came out in 97? What did you think of the first one?
I think the first movie was a very, very unique movie. It's a very big movie for me. It's a very big movie that I remembered because it's like my movie that tells me say no to drugs.
Right.
So yeah, that's
right.
That's the gist of that movie.
That and Requiem for a Dream.
For sure, for sure.
Those are the top two no drug movies. Like just no, just like no.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, I do remember. I could remember quite a few things about the original movie.
Like the baby.
Well, yeah, exactly.
That haunts me. That literally haunts me. That's a scary thing.
Right. You know, it is. It is.
And the movie is punched with so many different types of emotions, almost like it's skipping around in genre, which now that we've seen Danny Boyle's career over 20 years after that movie and now, he does that. He runs from horror film to comedy to... you know, Slumdog Millionaire, which is, I guess, drama, right? Drama love story. And he jumps around quite a lot. And he's done thrillers. He's done, like I said, horror.
Sci-fi.
Sci-fi, right? Sunshine, right? He did Sunshine. Yeah, so you can tell, like, it's a good movie to start with because he is playing with a lot of things here. Like, yeah. He'll spring into the gross comedy, but also hallucinatory, like, secrets of drug use by putting the world's worst toilet scene in the movie, right? Yeah. In the first one. And then he'll equal that out with the most horrifying consequences, which is the dead baby left in the crib.
Exactly.
And then he'll come back to that by making it a hallucination later on for Mark in the movie when he's detoxing. And it's so creative, so out there. It still feels like it's so creative and out there. If you watch it today, it's required viewing, in my opinion, as far as the cinephiles go. That's how much I think of this.
Well, especially in Danny Boyle's career.
Yeah, and forget the careers, man. It also started with Ewan McGregor. Ewan McGregor's career jumped from that point, too. And Ewan McGregor has been in not just Star Wars, of course, but he's been in a lot of shit. And some of that's really good. He had his directorial debut last year. What was that movie called?
American Pastoral, yeah.
And we didn't hate that movie. We reviewed it okay, pretty okay. We didn't hate it or love it, but yeah, it was in the middle.
It was in the middle, for sure.
In the middle. Listen to our review. Anyway, so like definitely a lot of careers were started because of this movie, and all the other supporting characters too. Also, by the way, have had their own careers. Not as big, of course, but they've had their own shit too. So all that aside, we love the first one. What did you think? Initial stuff, first impressions, or whatever you want to call it, on the second one here.
Plays very heavy on the fact that there's a lot of back. What do you call it? Not foreshadowing, but there's a lot of stuff that it's a lot of time. It's a lot of you have to
callbacks.
There's a lot of callbacks. There you go. Okay. Sorry, I couldn't think of the word.
Okay,
total amount of callbacks to original Trainspotting movie, and even before that, like just in life for them. And it's a lot of things that kind of a full circle thing going on for them.
Right.
So yeah, it's interesting. Overall, I like the movie. I hate the name. I can't stand the name, but that's besides the
right.
point.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I love that all the characters stayed true to each other. Nobody felt, you know...
Right, nobody felt faked off.
Exactly.
Like Spud.
Our fakest character, I would say, is Ewan McGregor. And even that, he doesn't feel fake. He just feels like he's a changed person. And
I think he feels lost to what he should... Like, what he was,
or what he could have been or should have been.
Because what he was, like, he found at the end of the movie, which is why he was perfect at the end of the first movie, because at the end of the first movie, through betrayal, he found an opportunity to start afresh, start anew, get out of this lifestyle. And obviously, over the 20 years, he's tried that, he's failed that, and he's the only lost person in this movie, even compared to Begbie, who is a real psychotic motherfucker.
Sure.
And Spud, who's still a drug dealer. 20 years a drug dealer, not killed himself yet. That's amazing.
Oh, drug addict.
Drug addict, sorry. Did I say dealer?
Dealer.
I'm sorry, I said...
I was like, he does not deal
at all. No, he can't sell shit to save his life. No. Addict, sorry.
I mean, there's a great intro to Spud who... it just reminds you how Spud is Spud.
And right, Spud is like such a great comic relief too. Like the reason that he never knew about daylight savings and how it works, like he was always late for everything and being late for everything by 1 hour threw his life down the toilet.
Right, exactly.
Which is hilarious and sad and a little dark too, all at once.
Yeah.
He explains all that. That's his, and it's also like a return to his, a callback, I guess you can call it. Not really. It's more subtle anyway. It's a callback to his job interview scene in the first movie where he tries to fuck up an interview process so he can pretend that he's looking for work to show the government he's looking for work, but he wants to stay a drug addict. So he has to pretend he's anxious for the job, but also not get the job.
Yeah.
And that scene is very much like, it shows a lot of what Spud is as a character, how perfect he fits into this whole thing, and sure, he's his own character. And that scene with the daylight savings thing, when he's talking to, he's like an AA meeting, right? Or NA meeting.
Yeah, yeah.
He's telling these people the story about daylight savings, and it's just, it's like, it reminds me of that scene.
Yeah.
Earlier in the first one. So, yeah, but I think Mark Renton is the only character. I mean, he's a main character, but he is the only character that's lost. So he feels like his return back to this small town where he grew up.
Right, because he's not wanted. It's not that he's wanted. He doesn't fit in any of those lives anymore. He doesn't fit in his old life, which he left and abandoned completely, right? And then he doesn't fit in his new life, or theoretical new life, right? Because he's failed at it. So he has nowhere to go, really. And what he wants to do is, I guess, make amends, to see if he can make it back.
It's like make amends, but also like trying to make his history part of his present, which biggest problem that this movie is telling these characters that's what they are, because everyone, and the main Veronica, the character, puts it best to everybody. She says it in Ukrainian, by the way, who no one understands her. She says something like, you know, in our country, we let the past where it is. We don't talk about it all the time. We don't think about it. We talk about the future or the present, right? She didn't say all that, but she says all that by saying something like that.
Like, you guys live in the past.
And they do. They're constantly talking about their
soccer,
favorite football teams,
yeah,
right?
Exactly. Yeah.
And they constantly relive all these childhood meetings.
Right, and it's not just them. It's that... It's their environment. It's their society.
Their town. Yeah.
It's their town. And specifically because even when they go do that really cool scene where they go to the bar and...
Oh, they steal the credit cards?
Steal the credit cards.
Yeah.
That's all about the past right there. That's literally all those people wanting to live in the past.
Right, wanting to live in that one moment that law was outlawed,
right,
or whatever.
Right, just that one little moment of time.
And they're still bitter about it. Right,
right?
And
so
still
bitter.
So they all get together and have fun.
Exactly.
Making fun of the establishments.
That says a lot, not just to like I said, it's not just these characters who are that. It's this whole town that feels like that way, or this type of people, all these Scottish people, because that's where Edinburgh is.
Right. Right.
Yeah, that's what it feels like.
Yeah, I know. I know where it was. I just didn't.
No, I know.
Yeah. I just have no authority on those areas. So, yeah, I agree. And I think that's their biggest problems. And I think that the very notion or the very fact that they all became addicted to something. Begbie got addicted to violence. But or the excitement of violence, maybe.
Yeah, the excitement.
Like he couldn't even get
the thrill of the job, right?
I think there's a really good reason why he couldn't get off. He had that side plot about Viagra and not getting it.
Well, it was
for
the fact that he wasn't doing anything, you know, like excited him anymore.
Yeah,
the rush wasn't there.
Right,
the rush of being almost caught.
Right. Which is funny because he was a fugitive. I thought the rush would always be there, but I guess he needs more than that. Anyway, besides him, I mean, everyone has this addiction to old... I mean, now, 20 years later, the wonderfully horrible thing about it, and I think what this movie is... Why this movie is a good sequel is because it shows these people that they are addicted to the first movie. And the people in that first movie were addicted to drugs. And they were addicted to a lifestyle that their bodies at that time could handle, and responsibilities that they didn't have as much as powerfully as 20 years later, which is part two. And I think all of that, it implies these people who are just so infantile, and that they're stuck in an era because of their drug use, and like the daylight savings time. Like that's a funny thing, but also it says like this guy was such a drug addict for so long that when he tried to get his life together, he didn't know fundamental truths about how everything works.
The world works, yeah.
Right, he doesn't know what taxes are, maybe, or he doesn't know what daylight savings times are, and that's sad. And yeah, that's also kind of true in a way. Like, if you have been living a lifestyle like that, even for 5 years, you're going to be out of the fucking loop when you come back.
Right, exactly.
When you get out of your drug-addled cave. And I think that's what these people are. They're amalgamations of that. And it's, again, very funny. I have great scenes in it. But, like, it's very fucked up. Very fucked up. Equally as fucked up as the first one. And probably more so because they're so much older now. And they're falling into the same pits and traps. Now they're doing it with a little bit more business style. They have licenses now. And they have they may have a bank account or two, right? But still, you know? So any of that work? I mean, did that work for you, all that stuff in the movie?
I
mean,
yes and no. Like, I just felt it was playing so heavy. And like you said it. You said it that doesn't. I remember we talked about this one, like right after the movie because we saw it together.
Yeah, one of the first few times when we see a movie together.
Yeah, really. I felt it played really heavy on the fact that this movie required viewing for this movie beforehand is Trainspotting. And without it, you kind of do feel left out. There's a lot of stuff that you would miss out on. I personally think so. Mm-hmm. And I remember you said that you don't. You feel like this movie stands on its own.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you still feel that way after so long, mm-hmm. Or after a couple weeks or whatever. But I felt like, yeah, like I kind of do think that the required viewing is Trainspotting. Because without it, you don't get a lot of the sense of who these characters are. Although the sense are there, it kind of is brought back. I would agree, but you don't see how stuck they are, and they kind of try to drive that point, but they drive that point through flashbacks, through callbacks, and
yeah, but they also do through flashbacks that don't exist in the original film.
And I kind of like that about the movie.
I think it feels the same way. The same point is driven. There's this scene when Begbie. I want to get to that point at one point, but Spud gets into his head, and it's a good thing too to write his experiences down because he's had a life that most people wouldn't want on their worst enemy, you know, or have ever imagined. And sure, this guy has seen a lot of shit. He's been through a lot of shit. And so he writes down some all of his life, and it's amazing. He keeps writing. And it's amazing that any of it's legible. I'll try reading. Whenever his writing was on screen, I could read, like, maybe half of it. But he writes it all down in Begbie, who is a menacing force by then. He knows that Mark is in town. He's the hothead, crazy person that basically got into this huge bar fight because he hit someone in the head over in the first movie, right? Like, he's insane. He is a true insane person. He is threatening him, and he's a menace. That's a horror movie in that scene when Spud is there, and he could die any moment. He's reading this stuff to him, and he's making Spud at one point read his own memories back to him about his experiences with Begbie, right? Or Spud and Begbie. And some of those scenes are from the original movie, like especially that one in the bar, but some of the others weren't.
Yeah.
And they go back into other things, and they talk about the dad thing and the homeless person. And I think that those two scenes, one that is a direct line to the first movie and the other that's made up, they both feel the same way. And there's those moments, I think help me in my convictions to say that this movie stands on its own as a sequel more than most movies. More than most sequels. You don't have to see the first one. It is better if you do, because the first movie is amazing. Like, I'm not going to neglect anyone to see the first movie. But I think if you watch the second one and then watch the first, I don't think it would be that terrible. I don't know if that's the right order, maybe, but like, I think that part two does stand on its own because of it peppers in, it mixes examples that are not from the first as well as calling back to the first. And I don't know. Maybe it just worked for me, I guess.
Like in the original T2.
In the original T2?
Yeah, the actual T2.
Terminator?
Like, I think that's a good sequel. That almost that can stand on its own.
Right, yeah, Terminator 2. That's a great sequel.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah. I should see that movie again, but I think you're right. I can't think of any details, but yes.
Yeah, like, they do some flashback stuff, and it's basically when she's getting, like, interviewed or whatever.
Right. We're not going to talk about
that. Sure, Terminator. But I'm saying, like, I think that, well, I'm saying, if you were going by sequels,
right.
I think that Judgment Day or whatever.
Maybe even Aliens. Yeah, I think James Cameron's good at sequels.
Yeah, so Titanic 2, guys. Anyways.
It rises up backwards.
And it just goes back there.
Right.
Yeah, so I would say, like, that's a good movie that holds on its own. I just think this, like, it doesn't require the original one to see it, to like, understand it and, like, really enjoy it or whatever. I think this one, I get what you're saying, and I'm not disregarding your thing, but I'm saying I think honestly, like, I got more of the movie because I saw Transformers.
Right, and I can't say how it feel for real if sure. I really see just sure. part two, but because I've seen part one so many times before, that I wish I could do that, but I also don't want to wish to be in a world where I haven't seen Trainspotting, because, like I said, it's required viewing for me. It's so great. I have that poster where he says,
there's
choose
a little...
life, choose a text.
Yeah, I remember.
And then that scene, you want to talk about that scene? Yeah. We talked about
that. That's a great scene. And I love the what's it called, the fixing of it, because it does feel like he modernizes
Twitter.
It.
I like how he says Twitter. Twitter.
Yeah, he modernizes it for for our times. And I think it's a great scene. And
it adds a lot more darkness to it, too. Because
it's a lot more darkness.
Yeah. So that scene... That's a very sequel heavy scene, by the way, because it explains something that's famous from the first movie. But that scene is you're right. You never think you want an explanation for something like that. And if you are a child of the 80s, I mean, like you and I were born in the 80s, right? But we're not children from there. We didn't remember the 80s. But if we were like adolescents in the 80s, you would know that Choose Life is that anti-drug thing that Reagan posted or Nixon did or something. And it was in all the TV stuff, Choose Life, not drugs, right? That's the whole point. That's the playoff. And he explains that in the thing. And I didn't know that. I thought it was just like made up from the movie, from the original Trainspotting. That's how much I know about 80s
and they're just
pop
making
culture.
Fun of it.
Yeah. Right, and they're just making fun of it. And but this one, that the Trainspotting was so powerful that it raised it up and like gave it an extra nostalgic awesomeness to it. And then this movie, MT2, he explains where did it come from, but which I don't think it needed. But then Renton and his own and Mark becomes more Mark than he has ever been in any of the two movies, probably, because he's actually himself. He's actually the anti-establishment rebellious kid that he's always wanted to be, but instead chose to give the middle finger to choosing life by fucking up his own life. And the way he describes his conviction to that choose life bit in that scene at the restaurant with Veronica is perfect. It's perfect for that. I think that's why I love the scene so much. I don't know if you agree with that stuff. No. But I think he was falling in love with himself in that scene, kind of.
Right. Well, he's genuine in that scene that that makes Veronica kind of,
I mean, also, probably fuck him, too.
Right, exactly, for sure.
I think they have sex in the next scene.
Right, yeah. I mean, but there's a lot of homages to the original Trainspotting. Little Easter eggs. That you notice, for example, the whole car thing where he almost gets run over again, or that toilet scene when he's what's it called? That toilet scene when he's getting out, right? Sorry, I'm visually doing it to Oscar, right. And I'm totally
like your mic is going away.
Right, exactly,
from you.
And they do that also with the vents, for example, when he's towards the end of the movie.
Yeah,
very similar, like exact movements. Little here's and there's homages. There's Easter eggs. Which are cool to the movie. I don't hate
that.
Yeah,
plenty of Easter eggs. Yeah.
Right, exactly. I just really liked that all the characters were really true to themselves. And it kind of lived for these characters and how it happened. And it ended up being like they get closer for it. Like everybody, there's closure for everything. With openings, obviously.
Because it's still the same people.
It's life, right? But at the same time, that it ends very poetically of what happens. So
where they all get what they deserve, which is nothing.
Exactly.
And the only thing Spud gets is like a redemptive window to show his wife, his ex-wife, I guess at that point, and his kid, I guess, truth in his history. Like he shows them the basically a book of his own stuff. I really thought they were gonna go with the publishing angle, and they might still do that. But
yeah, I really thought it
was a good idea.
I really thought they were gonna go
it's
there also.
It's a goal of Ascalus.
It felt more genuine for him. To try to make amends with his wife.
Right, no, that was perfect. Thank you, movie, for doing that and not going the other route. But I mean, they could have added that to it if they wanted.
Exactly.
Or they could do it off screen. But that was a perfect thing for him. Like, that's what he deserved. He's always been the nicest guy. I always thought he deserved the money. But then in part two, he explains, like, Mark should never have given me that money. I was a drug addict. I used it on drugs. You think I was going to pick up my life with that $4,000 you gave me?
Right, exactly.
And he says that to him. And then later on, Veronica offers him the money from her betrayal to... what's his name? Not Begbie. Fox something boy. What's his name? The other guy. The fourth guy we haven't talked about much.
His best friend.
Right. His best friend. I mean, they call him Simon. Spud, Renton, Simon, Begbie. But they all have different names. Marco, for example. His name is Marco in the movie, too. Anyway, Simon. When her betrayal, he's like, she offers him some money, which is a lot of money. That's $100,000, I think. So yeah. He offers her some. He's like, no, I'm just going to spend it on drugs. Don't give it to me. And she's like, all right. And I don't want to talk about too much Veronica because I really want to talk about the main cast, which is really about them only. So I thought that was really cool for him. I think Mark's ending thing. I mean, what did you think about his arc in the film? I mean, what is he
Mark's
to you?
Arc in the film?
Yeah, Mark arc. What is he to you, Mark? Did he get what he deserved? Do you feel like he should have gotten more negative, meaning like more punishment maybe? I mean, he's not a good person, but he's not a terrible person. He's not his friend Simon. He's not Begbie, right? But he's not a good person either.
Okay. I mean, I don't know. I think he got what he deserved.
Almost gang hanged.
Just for the fact that
That scene with the bathroom and the Begbie breaking in and shit.
Yeah,
horror movie again.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Reminds you of Trance.
I
know you haven't seen Trance yet.
You totally gave it to you.
Didn't I give it to you?
No, you didn't. You pulled it out for me to take, and I was like, "Oh, cool." Then I just left.
Well, that's
and
your fault.
Right, exactly. It's my fault. Well, I'm just saying.
Right.
Calm down.
I'm calm.
Another Danny Boyle film, but what's it called? I was saying, yeah, I think Mark's main story is how it ends for him is very poetic for the fact that it's just he got what was coming to him. He did it, and it was coming back to him because he was trying to do the same thing. Like he was not trying to do the same thing, but he was trying to do the same thing over again, and he just got exactly what was coming back to him. It made sense.
Yeah,
like he did it once. You got away with it once, and you were allowed that one chance, and you fucked it up, and we know you're gonna fuck it up again. So why give it to you again?
Right, exactly. There was a scene I just thought of. I left behind. Well, I want to talk about the end credit sequence because I think it is very poignant to what we've been watching so far.
Sure,
but there's another thing I want to talk about and try to remember. Do you have something before I think about it?
I just really love Spud's character.
Yeah, he's so great. I mean, you can tell that Danny Boyle loves it. I think I heard an interview actually.
Right,
Spud is his favorite.
Right, exactly. Like, and these are based on books, and there's a book specifically just for Spud. I think.
Right, but you can't make that into a movie. Exactly, he said, right? He said that's too hard.
Yeah, that and I don't think they.
Or to like audience friendly, or people would
something,
dig it,
something like that. Yeah.
There was something. The soccer scene. I got that. I love when Veronica says to the boys in Ukraine, like, "You guys should just fuck each other." When they talk about soccer, so
yeah.
You know, how I talk about film is the same when they talk about soccer. Sometimes, you know, and like, damn, I didn't even understand what they were saying. They were overlapping each other. It was great. Another thing, let's talk about some of the direction because we've just been talking about the characters, and that's cool and all. But Danny Boyle is obviously got a bigger budget. And you could tell immediately, obviously, the original was made poorly, actually, or on a low budget. And so this one has a bigger budget. It is just as, and probably more creative. I love how Spud's opening talking sequence, or everybody's actually, I think at least two others, but his especially, is it's subtitled to get us into the rhythm of their language. And obviously, the subtitle's taken out, and they're subtitled with fun stuff, like Tarantino movies are subtitled.
Sure.
Not in a standard way. And the movie's peppered with all these great little flourishes of a digital animation thing in it to, you know, exaggerate a point or extract a subtle thing. And what did you think about that? Did you like that style?
Yeah, I did like it. And you notice it right away when it's gone because you're like, oh, wait, like, I kind of understand them now. Like, it's like...
Right, right, like, exactly. Because I've always been watching Trainspotting, except for the first time in 97, as in a VHS or in a subtitle format, you know, because, like, I watch everything subtitles anyway, but I guess that's how I understand them.
Sure, exactly.
Had I not, I'll probably be like, what the fuck is Spud saying? I mean, that scene in the interview scene in 97, in the original, he's rambling the whole thing out.
Yeah,
you don't fucking know what he's saying. It's hard. I still can't think of the scene, but let's talk about the ending. So when the film ends, there has this ending credit sequence where all the buildings of their past life out there. I mean, in the sequel too, but in the first movie, all the iconic buildings and stuff and scenery is taken down, demolished. What did you think of all that? Do you think it was really true, really happening, or is that something that...
I mean, it did feel like that. It did feel like this part of this, you know, where we came from, this low-income housing
like
or whatever.
Like, they became like slums that no one wants anymore.
Exactly. It became so crappy that they needed it to, you know, gentrify it or whatever.
Put condos in, or newer condos.
Right, exactly.
Get all the drug addicts out.
Right, right. They needed to do something where they needed to completely fix up the area, because everywhere else was getting fixed except for this place.
Hmm.
And you could kind of point it to the point where, like, even these guys aren't getting fixed. They've been stuck in time this whole time. And now fix your act up. Like, the world is telling you need to move on. And it's kind of like very blatantly there with even their where they used to live, where they came up from. Everything is going away.
Right. I did think of that scene now.
Okay, cool.
It's the scene where they go to, not the train yard, but they go out to the country.
Yeah.
And they talk about major things in Simon's life and in Mark's life, which is their biggest sins. One is Tommy dying
sure.
in the first film and the baby dying.
Yeah.
So what did you think of that?
It was Simon's baby dying.
Simon's baby dying, of course. That was his sin, of course. It was horrible. And then Mark's sin is to basically give Billy drugs and get him into that thing and not holding responsibility for him or even taking care of him. And he died from drug overdose. Oh, he died from not eating and sleeping, and his cat's poop gave him a disease, and he died that
way. Yeah, which is even crazier.
Yeah, even crazier. What did you think of that? Because it felt very genuine to me.
It did feel genuine, and I love the reaction. And it's the one time we see them. They have to shoot heroin afterwards.
The only time they come back to it. You always wonder the movie. Like, right. Are they gonna,
the only time they come back for it. And you see Spud, like, aching for it because he really wants it. But he's holding himself because he's trying to rehab himself.
Right, he's still an addict. I mean, they're all addicts, but, like, sure. He is more fresh. Into
yeah. Well, I mean, Simon is an addict to
cocaine. Right.
This guy, well, Mark isn't an addict on anything, actually.
I mean, He's running,
I guess, yeah.
I mean, there are people who get exhilaration from that. Sure, they can't not run every day.
Right, exactly. But yeah, there's they have to do it because they have to forget. They have to forget the pain.
Yeah. They're reminded of the pain of the first movie, and we're reminded in turn because if you have seen the movie, which is really a very powerful scene that is completely a very sequel thing because you have to know the first movie to really get that. So that was the scene I want to talk about. And the other scene I just remember, too, is that one scene I didn't really agree with, like 100% or less than 100% than some of the other stuff, is the only thing that looked like a cameo was when they visit the old friend that's a lawyer. What's her name?
Oh, that did feel very cameo-esque.
The only scene that kind of threw me out because it didn't feel...
Which was Mark's girlfriend or something.
Mark's,
right?
Well, it was like a girlfriend, whatever it was. Yeah. It was a very strange relationship. But she became like this.
What was like the best friend of Spud's wife, right? Or Spud's ex-wife?
Kelly McDonald, Diane is her name.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
No, Spud needed a lawyer, right? Is that what it was?
No, Simon needed a lawyer.
Simon.
And it was interesting plot twist where they called back because it starts off with his intro is like... He's blackmailing somebody, and he's trying to get money that way, right?
And then
it ended up coming out where I guess he was just asking for too much or whatever the hell.
Or they realize that you can't extort someone forever because they'll realize, like, I have nothing to lose.
Exactly.
Like, what's the
and th- that ended up happening where they turned him in, and he's like, yeah, you can't blackmail people. Like, you're being arrested.
Right.
And he's like, oh, well, he went to get a lawyer. And I love, you know, he's like, or Mark, he's like, oh, this price seems reasonable. He's like, that's an hour. He's like... Of course it is. Like, why wouldn't it be?
So funny.
You're so out there.
But it was just clearly, my point is that was a cameo. That was something that worked the least for me.
That did feel cameo-esque, for sure. I was trying to think of another one. I also didn't feel like, there is some slog, not too much, but we spent a lot of time with, oh my God, what's the guy's name? The fucking crazy guy?
Begbie?
Yeah, but Begbie, with Begbie's family.
Yeah, Salter.
We spent a lot of time with him being able to get it up. Him
taking his kid out to rob. He's literally the anti parent. Yeah. Like, he's like, you gonna go to college?
Right. Exactly.
Who wants an education? Like, oh my God, everything's the opposite. Land.
Right. Exactly.
Like, he wants them to come with him to be a criminal like him.
Right.
And be probably
a lot of the things. Yeah. Right. Exactly. And I just felt that we spent a lot of time like that, which we didn't need to, but. I get it.
But this movie is about the four of them.
Exactly.
And I did think we needed it ultimately because if it was either not getting those scenes or getting that awesome scene at the end.
I felt by getting those scenes, I felt that Spud got shafted by not getting scenes with his kid.
No, because I think Spud's thing was
the fact that he's been an addict this whole time, and I get it. And like I said, I felt that way,
right.
And it kind of gives you that.
I know we like Spud more.
Like I said, we could.
I would rat out Begbie for something he didn't do. That's how much I don't like that character. Right, like Spud, I would give him a hug as well as whatever anti-drug thing.
Sure.
So yes, a big difference, Rob. We love the characters, but this film handles each character as evenly as possible, I think.
Yeah, there's a lot of...
And I think Begbie's scene with his family where the only time I've seen him swallow any amount of pride at all was when he's telling his son...
because this guy is his determination.
He's never stopped.
Right. If he sets his mind to something and he thinks he's right, he needs to go that way.
Yeah, until he dies, he'll do it.
Exactly.
And he'll kill anyone in the way.
Even his friends.
Right. Yeah. When he fully decides he's going to kill Mark, you know, and right before he does so, he goes to his family and he talks about his life and how he is, I mean, his father was a worser version of him, and the fact that his son is becoming a better one with education. And it's a perfect, a really heartwarming scene from a character that you've never been heartwarmed to. Right. It was so good scene. It was a really good scene. So, then
from a character who's a piece of shit.
He's a piece of shit. Yeah.
I mean, so, he escapes prison.
Right.
Right.
I love how they put him back in prison. Yeah. That was great.
That was great.
Yeah. Like, that's exactly what he gets. Like, because Simon and Mark and Spud especially, they're not killers. They're not going to... They're not Begbie's level of that. So, anything else now on T2?
No, I can't think of anything. Like I said, I had fun watching it. It wasn't a bad movie at all. I just think, like I said, there's required viewing before this. And you say no. But yeah.
No, I mean, I say less likely.
Less likely, sure.
That's my point. Less likely. So yeah. Anyway, that's it for T2. Give our sign outs here. You can follow me on Twitter and on Letterboxd at Armin Filmmaker. That's Filmmaker with ARMEN.
Ruff. You can follow me at Gamer Ralph. That is with two R's and an F.
Sweet. All right, everybody. I'll see you all later for the next month's bonus. Have a good night.
Coffee and pie.
Coffee and pie. Oh my.
You didn't hear it from me.